frequently the other way around, Jester said wryly. She also put us at risk, Winter said, rubbing the scars on her throat. Toron disentangled himself from his sister and stepped to Winter, causing her to smile. Winter, he said, his tone a mix of humor and wonder. How does it feel to be openly against the Empire? Hunted, she said. They all laughed, and Illidan gestured to the door at the far hall, where savory scents wafted, and the clink of silverware signaled what lay inside. I'm sure you're hungry, she said. For the time being, you are safe here. Enjoy a meal and get some rest. We have much to discuss.
The last time we mingled with allies, they sought to kill us in our beds, Lorth said.
That will not happen here, Illidan assured them. Those within this refuge all have enough conviction that the plague is ineffective.
Did Holly make it? Raiden asked.
She missed us at Tarosian, Illidan said. But I foresaw her arrival and sent a rider to bring her and the Defiant here. They arrived last night. It appears all our allies are finally under one roof. She smiled, but the expression bore a trace of worry. The euphoria of the reunion faded, and the group parted, some to eat, others to talk. Illidan caught Raiden's eye, and he followed her to the center pillar of the chamber. Passing through the forest of requiems, where Astyn directed the training, they ascended into the pillar that had once been the foundation of the Oracle Tower. Illidan brought him to a small office that had been owned by one of the high captains in the Rune Guard. Commander Othan was now Overseer Othan, and Illidan had taken his office as her own. Broad windows overlooked the training hall, providing an excellent view of the two paladins about to duel, as well as the large hole where she'd escaped her cell.
What's it like, coming back to Dawn's Keep?
Haunting, she said, and then added, but only at first. He turned to face her.
I missed you.
And I you, she said. Now that they were alone, he noticed the strain on Illidan's face, the rigidity that implied months of worry. She was less than a century old, young by elven standards, but she looked much older. She looked more like Elenir. He reached out and pulled her into an embrace. Softer than the first, they clung to each other as if hoping the moment would last a lifetime, and he relished the warmth of her form. When they parted, she had tears in her eyes.
I'm sorry, he said. I wish we could have returned sooner.
She smiled. It matters not. The true conflict is upon us, and I am grateful you will stand at my side. Chapter 39 Reprieve. Raiden watched the paladins through the window.
You've done well.
I disagree, she said. Nearly the whole of our army is gone, and the fragment that remains is languishing in the fortress I destroyed.
Yet you built a new army, he said.
Her lips twitched into a smile. A moment of cleverness, he laughed.
Such resourcefulness is rapidly becoming your legacy.
She smiled and stepped to the desk, where a plate sat with food partially eaten. Books and maps were strewn about the desk, and most of Commander Othan's personal decorations had been removed, leaving only the banners of the oracles on the wall. She gestured to a seat, and he caught the chair, dragging it to sit with her. "Will we ever have time together?" she asked. His gut tightened as he recalled his conversation with Winter.
"When the war ends, we will have a wealth of time."
Her eyes flicked to the hole that led to her broken prison. Time is not always a blessing.
True, he conceded, but time with you certainly is.
Do you want to see my cell? She asked, not hearing him.
Perhaps when it is enshrined as a monument.
She snorted and looked to him. Do you still believe in me, even after seeing what I have wrought upon Dawnskeep? He shrugged.
You kept your oath. Your sisters abandoned it.
She shook her head. I suppose they did.
Do you think we can win? He asked.
I see that question in their eyes every day, she said, gesturing to the rebellion. They want the truth, but it's a truth I cannot give. But you have delivered a chance, that much is certain. They sat at the desk and talked, the conversation shifting from the war to her captivity, and then to their past. Raiden told a story of Elenir that brought her to laughter, and she shared tales of her father, an elf who died before Raiden became Runeguard. After months of being hunted, it was a welcome reprieve. Both knew it could not endure, but it didn't matter. It was enough that they could talk as if the war occurred in a distant land. They both steered clear of heavy topics, and instead talked of things that drew amusement. "Marrow really commanded an army of sharks?" Alidian asked, her eyes wide.
"I would not have believed it, unless I was present," he said, a smile on his face. "One tried to bite her and she slapped it, and then scolded it as if it were an errant child."
Her laughter reverberated around the room, washing away the tension he'd carried from the moment they'd parted ways. She too seemed unburdened, and as the conversation continued, she smiled more, her eyes gradually softening. For the briefest of moments, they were simply together, and the matters of weight and war were all but forgotten. They spent the afternoon in her office, occasionally stealing kisses, but mostly sitting together, their hands touching as they talked. The contact was tentative, the hesitation of love after time apart. Raiden expected an interruption, but none came, and he noticed through the window that the rebellion seemed equally as reluctant to return to training. Raiden watched Jester and Red taking turns in the paladins, and the duels elicited laughter from the griffin soldiers. Jester's skill was legendary, but adapting to an enormous body took time, and he lost to Red 4 times in quick succession. Red took to the paladin with surprising ease, the water falling from her head, shimmering a distinct shade of crimson. The 2 giant soldiers brawled until Jester caught her arm and flipped her onto her back, landing atop her. Even through the paladin, her flush was visible, and he quickly retreated, a smile on his face. "It looks like Jester and Red favor each other," Alidian said, following his gaze.
"They have for some time," Raiden said, "but neither wished to voice their sentiments. They prefer to keep their budding romance quiet."
Raiden didn't say why, but Alidian's smile dimmed, suggesting she knew the reason. Jester and Red felt deeply for each other, but they both feared their fate in the war. They had fought together against the Verinai and now the Empire, and both accepted the risks like seasoned soldiers. "War has a way of enhancing bonds," she said, her eyes turning to Holly and John, who were attempting to keep their children from sneaking into a requiem. Raiden noticed them and smiled.
"Holly is a wonder."
"She is a mother to all," she said with a smile.
"Did you hear of her time as a general?"
She laughed lightly. "Your defiant that arrived with her insisted she be their commanding officer."
"And Astyn?" Raiden asked.
"Saw her merit and appointed her general on the spot, much to Holly's chagrin," Alidian replied. Princess Aura picked up Holly's youngest and carried the squealing girl to her mother. Raiden noticed a change in the young woman. Dressed for combat, she walked with confidence, and her carriage was strong. Her hair was coiled down her back, and a slender sword hung on her hip. Astyn frequently walked at her side, the proximity suggesting another romance was brewing. Raiden's news about the plague spread among the rebellion, enhancing the hope sparked by the creation of the paladins. He imagined Alidian's initial arrival had been filled with despair, a crushed rebellion on the verge of defeat. Yet Alidian had salvaged their hope and inspired them anew.
"Do you understand how impressive you are?" he asked, interrupting her description of Astyn's leadership.
Her cheeks burned a shade of pink.
"Why would you say that?"
"You have shouldered the burden of being High Oracle and faced down those you called family. If my brother had betrayed me, I doubt I would have had the courage to stand against him."
She smiled shyly and looked away. "You had a hand in my escape from Tyria's prison."
Did you know that?
How? He asked, raising an eyebrow.
I watched your future more than any other, she said softly. The prospect of a life together.
She stole a glance and then looked away.
Just how much did you watch me? He asked suspiciously.
Only the most exciting events, she said with a laugh. He marveled at how easily she elicited a facet of his soul he'd thought lost.
In a flood of images, he recalled a time before he'd been the soldier, of nights laughing with his brother. They'd talked about elven maidens they had met after becoming room guard, an office that held high esteem. The greatest threat had been bandits or goblin tribes, and both were no match for a room guard patrol. Like the rest of the Verenai, he'd looked up to the oracles, believing them to be the best of the mages, the most honourable.
Why so sober? Alidian asked, intruding on his thoughts.
Just thinking of my brother, he said.
Will you tell me about him?
They were sitting on the floor close to the window, a plate of cheeses and breads between them. Jester had delivered it an hour ago and winked before shutting the door. Raiden had grinned and accepted the plate.
Should we be working on our defences? He asked.
Alidian made a subtle motion towards Astyn and Aura, who were attempting to be sly as they talked to Jester and Red. They realized Raiden was watching and abruptly parted, their expressions filled with amusement.
They think they're playing matchmaker, Alidian said.
Perhaps I shouldn't have kissed you at the gate.
No, she said. That was definitely what you should have done.
He grinned and selected a piece of cheese, which turned out to be dwarven fire cheese. Through the sudden tears, he spotted Marrow with a broad grin on her face. Unlike the others, she made no effort to hide her contribution to the meal.
Blasted girl, he said.
She laughed.
She just wants to help.
But which she?
The other one,
Marrow said, her voice coming from just behind Raiden.
Marrow! Alidian said, jumping at the sound. A little privacy would be appreciated.
Of course, Marrow said.
But don't hurt him. He's fragile.
He sputtered a retort, but she was already gone. Alidian was in fits of amusement, and he picked up a wedge of cheese to throw at her. For several furious moments, cheese flew like arrows until they both sat against the table, their shoulders touching.
I'm sorry about your mother, he said quietly.
She laughed sourly.
Rumour inevitably outdoes reality, yet in this regard the truth is more unbelievable. She is in fact alive.
She's not dead?
He asked, raising an eyebrow. A swirl of green smoke seeped through the floor, causing him to turn and instinctively draw his sword. But Alidian merely laughed and motioned to the figure rising into view. Then Alidian waved to the glass window and darkened it, preventing anyone from seeing into the chamber.
Raiden, she said. It appears my mother would like to speak with you.
Elenir smiled as she rose from the floor and stepped onto the stone.
Don't stare, she chided. It's rude.
Raiden couldn't help it. He stared. Green and luminescent, Elenir's very flesh had been altered. Her eyes glowed green as she swept her hand around her waist, extinguishing the smoke. Then she sucked in her breath, and her body reverted to the colouring of flesh. But her stark blue eyes had been replaced with a vivid green.
What happened to you? Raiden asked.
Alidian sank into a seat behind the desk and motioned to her mother. She anticipated the removal of her magic with the horrending dagger and prepared a way so the loss of her magic would alter her physical makeup.
You planned this? Raiden asked.
I did, Elenir said with a smile. And what freedom it has brought.
Dressed in pants and a form-fitting tunic, she looked like any common elf, except for the striking green of her eyes. Oddly, the silver in her hair was gone, making her appear centuries younger than her 800. It was the look of one who has seen a great weight removed.
You're no longer an oracle, he guessed.
Clever assumption, Elenir said.
I have passed the mantle of my bloodline to my capable daughter.
Elidian smiled.
I didn't really have a choice.
Elenir smiled as well, but it was tight and brief. Then Raiden noticed the tension about her frame, as if she held a terrifying secret that yearned to escape. He'd carried that same look after learning Master Skirl's secret.
What have you learned? He asked.
I have been scouting Herosian, and we have a problem. More than what we already have? Elidian asked.
Indeed, Elenir said.
It appears Tyria has discovered our refuge and no longer intends to wait.
She is on her way here.
Elidian sucked in her breath and closed her eyes. A moment later, she issued a very un-oracle-like curse. It appears we will not need to march on Herosian, she said. She's bringing the battle to us.
Chapter 40 Paladins. The news that the Empire was coming reached Toron as he was about to climb into a requiem. The peace of the last few hours shattered like glass, and the rebellion gathered around the requiems where they could hear Elidian. At the window of her office, she stood with Astyn, Aura, and Raiden.
My friends, Elidian called. As you may have heard, we received news that the Empire knows of our location and has begun their march.
She waited for the murmurs to settle before continuing. In 6 days, their army will reach Dawn's Keep, when we will defend a broken fortress. Her features tightened, and she swept her hand to the paladins.
We have more power than before and a plan to return the whole of our army to us. We have no place to flee, so this will be our final stand. Our situation is dire, but not without hope.
Marrow appeared next to Toron.
What does that mean?
Toron glanced her way.
That the war is about to end.
With us, the victor?
He didn't respond, and after a while Marrow disappeared again. Toron noticed Elidian did not describe the details of their plan, and instead laid out the designs of their defense. When another figure appeared at Toron's side, he sighed in irritation.
I don't have any answers, he said.
I thought you knew everything, Winter said with a smile.
Sorry, he said. I thought you were my sister.
She flicked her white hair.
I really like her, you know.
She's good at being liked, he said, until she gives you a scar.
I would have more scars without her, she said wryly, although I did gain a few.
She pointed to her neck, where a thin scar ran across her jugular. He ran a finger down a scar that ran from elbow to wrist.
I got this because she didn't like how I was cutting her food. She was 3 and tried to cut it right. Instead, the knife left this.
She raised an eyebrow.
How many scars did she give you?
More than I can count, he said.
How many were deserved?
Most of them, he said with a grin.
She smothered a laugh. Their banter hid their worries, and he noticed a glint to her eyes he hadn't seen before. Did she favor him, or was she just seeking friendship before the impending battle?
Do you know what caused her ailment? She murmured.
Even Elsin could not answer that, Toron said. She is just unique.
All are unique, Winter said. Some are just more interesting than others.
Her eyes lingered on him, suggesting her words had a second meaning. He smiled and returned his attention to Elidian, who was just finishing speaking. Then Elidian yielded to Astyn and Aura, who took her place.
Our force will be divided into 4 commands, Aura said. The paladins are being divided among them, 12 to each flank.
You're in my command, Winter whispered.
Oh?
Don't worry, she said, still smiling. I'll keep an eye on you.
He grinned at her words and again wondered if they hid a secondary meaning. Winter was beautiful and confident, but it was her integrity that commanded attention. Winter could have easily remained with the Empire
and as a master in the Guild of Verenai, she was guaranteed a high position. Yet she'd sacrificed a future of wealth and praise for honor. Toron found himself stealing looks at Winter as the rebellion prepared for a final battle. The ensuing days were filled with a rising tension, but the spark of attraction threaded its way into his thoughts, and every time she worked at his side, he examined her profile. At Astin's suggestion, the mages worked on the City of Horizon, further undermining its already weak structure. Cracks were expanded, caverns were carved, and magic supports were placed so they could be extinguished from a distance. Instead of a weakness, the broken city became a lethal maze of pitfalls and traps. The city that had once been a beacon of peace became a weapon of war. A surprising ally was Galathon. The Rock Troll King had a fearsome and brutal reputation, but the loss of his Mind Reaver had given him a singular focus. He worked harder than anyone, carrying boulders to reinforce the Dawnskeep walls and helping craft weapons for the paladins. Many still feared the Rock Troll, but Toron knew he was only a threat to Elsin. He would not rest until the slayer of his companion was in his grasp, and for the first time, Toron found a genuine kinship with the troll. Both had lost much because of Elsin, and both wanted to see her dead. 2 days before the battle, Toron was summoned to the exterior of the city. He'd spent the day finalizing the traps in Horizon and navigated his way through them. At one point, he climbed over a fallen roof in order to avoid the street, which contained 30 barrels of stone sap hidden in a cavern beneath the road. He reached the edge of Horizon and ascended to meet a small group gathered on a nearby hill. Alidian stood with Raiden and Marrow, as well as two of the paladins, which Toron recognized as captained by Jester and Red. Astin and Aura were also present, as were the three generals, Shalric, Holly, and Winter.
"Toron," Alidian said with a nod, "thank you for coming."
"Is this where we hear the true plan?" he asked. "As clever as ever," Raiden said. "And yes, this is where you learn our plan."
"She likes the plan," Marrow said, her eyes wide with excitement.
"You already know it?" Alidian asked.
"Your thoughts are quite loud," Marrow said,
eliciting amused smiles. Alidian shook her head in amusement and then pointed southeast. "The loyalty plague is tied to a runestone in Verisith. With Jester and Red, in two paladins, I will strike the front of the city, drawing their attention so Raiden can infiltrate the city from another direction." She nodded to Winter. "Winter has given us the location of a secret entrance to Verisith, and Devkin has departed to find it. Marrow and Raiden will rendezvous with him and enter the city to seek the runestone."
"You're taking my sister?" Toron asked in surprise.
Raiden nodded.
"Oracles cannot foresee her future, so Tariah will not be able to anticipate our attempt."
"And she wants to go," Marrow said.
"The Verenai have standing orders to capture her," Toron said with a frown. "And you want to send her into their guild hall?"
"You trusted me when we scouted for the Empire," Raiden said.
"You had Jester and Red,"
Toron said, not taking his eyes off Alidian.
"She trusts Raiden too," Marrow snapped. "More than you right now."
"Toron," Raiden said,
"I know you fear for your sister, but I would die before letting the Verenai take her."
"Or you could trust me," Marrow said with a scowl.
"I do trust you," he said to Marrow. "I don't trust her."
Marrow glared at him and then abruptly laughed.
"That's fair, but on this we are united."
Toron shook his head and looked away. Winter then said,
"What about the rest of us?"
She gestured to the city.
"The rest of you will defend Horizon and Dawnskeep," Alidian said, and motioned to Astin and Aura. "You know our defensive plans," Aura said. "We have 50 requiems and paladins, two of which will be used by Jester and Red. The rest we are dividing into four commands.
Alidian has informed us that the Empire will surround the city to prevent escape. They expect a quick victory and will strike as the sun sets.
Do they know about the paladins? Winter asked.
I cannot be sure, Alidian admitted. But their tactics suggest they do not, or they think their titans are impervious. The one thing I can be certain of is their use of the turned rebellion forces. Many of our allies are not under complete control of the plague, and the Empire has been forced to imprison thousands. Dwarves are being particularly resistant to the plague's effects.
Dwarves have always been hard-headed, Toron said.
Aye, Shalrik said, and wrapped his knuckles on his helmet. Hard as steel.
Alidian smiled. Taraya has decided to keep our forces as a reserve, and will not send them into battle. She fears that faced with killing their friends and neighbours, they will overcome the plague and turn on the Empire. Astyn was visibly relieved that he would not be fighting former allies.
They fight in their own way.
I have no wish to spill their blood, Holly said, and then amended, except for the ones that destroyed my farm. The Empire will use the Titans as the front line, with the Verinai battle mages in second and the human soldiers in third.
She's risking the Verinai? Winter asked.
We are 1,000 in number, Alidian said. While they are 50 times our size, even without the turned rebellion. She thinks we will be conquered, and doing so with the Verinai and their magic will cement their superiority for the future Empire.
What about the battle itself? Shalrik asked.
Of that I cannot say, she said. I foresee their initial formation, but that is all. Once the battle is joined, you will be on your own. The realization that they would be defending themselves against an oracle, without an oracle at their side, left them all sober. Toron wanted to believe they could succeed, but when the opponent could see the future, how could they win? Their fate would be in the hands of Alidian and her force, meaning the rebellion at Dawnskeep had one task, to survive. Once Raiden and Marrow destroyed the runestone, the rebellion would suddenly have the whole of their might, turning the tide of battle in an instant. But if the runestone was destroyed too late, it would not matter, and Toron would be dead. His eyes found Winter's, and for the first time he wanted a future beyond destroying Elsin. Their companionship over the last few days was tentative and new, but he sensed the potential for more. Toron, Alidian said, pulling him from his thoughts. One more thing.
Elsin, he guessed.
She nodded. I know you and Galathon seek her death, and although I would wish her to be stripped of her magic and imprisoned, this war does not permit us the luxury of justice. You are leading the western contingent of paladins, and Galathon will be in your command. When the time comes, you must stop her.
We shall, Toron said with a nod.
Then we are ready, Alidian said. Astyn, Aura, keep them alive. To the last breath, Aura said.
Astyn took her hand in his.
To the last breath, he murmured.
The avowal was echoed by the others, the words ringing with the certainty of their fate. All knew the battle would be their last. Alidian swept her eyes across the group, emotion drawing tears. My friends, she said quietly, you are the truest of allies. My beloved family, I bid you farewell. She reached down and collected the pack at her feet, as did Raiden. Then they embraced those in the circle and offered their farewells. Toron hugged Marrow last, and she smiled up at him.
She says we're going to win.
She's also crazy.
Marrow giggled.
I'll see you when it's over.
I'll have a mountain of cheese for you.
Her eyes lit up with excitement.
Don't promise what you can't deliver.
He looked to Raiden and the elf nodded, a tacit promise to protect her. They gathered together and raised hands in farewell. Then they strode away. In their paladins, Jester and Red nodded to the group and followed, their giant forms disappearing in the fading light. When they were gone, Winter stepped to Toron's side, her hand finding his.
Neither spoke, and none moved until darkness swallowed them.
"Let's go to war," Shalrick growled.
"No," Aura said. "To victory." Toron smiled with the others and cast a look where Illidan had departed. Their entire plan rested on Raiden, Devkin, and Marrow finding and destroying the runestone. Toron recognized the necessity of his sister's presence and the reason she could be the greatest asset, but she could also be the greatest flaw. Chapter 41 Broken. The journey to Verisith was tense, and Illidan felt the weight of the rebellion on her shoulders. Everything hinged on the success of their endeavor, and if they didn't break the runestone, her friends and allies would be slaughtered, knowing she had failed. Raiden's companionship was an unexpected boon. His mere presence bolstered her resolve, and she wished he would be at her side when she, Jester, and Red stormed the Citadel. When they reached the parting in the path, she clung to a final embrace, hoping it was not their last. He kissed her and smiled and then strode away with Marrow. Alone with two paladins, Illidan hiked the remainder of the distance to Verisith.
"I could carry you," Jester said, his voice distorted by the magic of the rune guard.
"I'd rather walk," she said. At 20 feet tall, the paladins had to shrink their gait in order to keep pace with her, but she required the time to examine her future, and Raiden's. She needed the timing to be exact, which was the excuse she gave. She didn't say she needed time to suppress Whisper.
"I could destroy Verisith,"
Whisper said. She resisted the urge to respond, and the magic of rage scowled and retreated. It had grown increasingly sullen in recent weeks, and Raiden's presence had all but silenced it. Rage could not blossom in the presence of hope, a fact she found comforting. A swirl of green smoke appeared at her side, and she smiled.
"Hello, Mother. Is everything set?"
Elenir asked, rising to walk with her daughter. Jester and Red glanced down but continued their measured pace. Illidan had informed them both of Elenir so they wouldn't accidentally strike when she appeared. None but the six going to Verisith knew the truth, but Elenir was the true secret. She would infiltrate the city with her unique magic and also seek the runestone. Two attempts on the same target, both depending on Illidan's effort to draw the forces to the front gates.
"Everything is in place," Illidan said. "I've scouted what I can," Elenir said, "but the city defenses are steeped in magic I cannot pass." "Do they know we're coming?" Illidan asked.
They were a few miles from the Canyon of Mages, and she began to feel the tension in her blood, the calm before the battle. Elenir smiled, the expression one of anticipation.
"They do, and are preparing themselves as we speak. They do seem a trifle frightened, but then the last time you fought, you destroyed a fortress." "I'm not using the magic of rage again," she said.
"I know," Elenir said, "but they don't know that."
"Are you actually excited?" Illidan asked.
"Of course," she said, her green eyes sparkling. "If I survive this war, I get to be free." Illidan couldn't help but smile.
"And if I survive, I get to be with Raiden."
"Enjoy it while you can," Elenir said.
"What do you mean?"
Illidan asked.
"You know you can't be with him,"
Elenir said distractedly. Illidan stared at her, and then Elenir noticed her expression. She frowned and then blinked in sudden understanding. Her expression turned regretful. She reached out to Illidan and placed a hand on her arm.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I thought you knew."
"Knew what?"
"Raiden has honor and integrity," she said, "but he has no magic. If you are joined to him, your child would likely not be an oracle."
Her gaze bored into Illidan.
"Our oracle line would come to an end."
Dread gripped Illidan's heart like a steel gauntlet, cold and crushing. She wanted to argue, to disagree,
but in her heart she knew her mother spoke the truth. And with only Alidian and Taraya still alive, the importance of her continuing bloodline was paramount.
"I'm sorry," Elenia repeated.
"I understand," Alidian said softly, fleetingly grateful that they had drifted behind Jester and Red, and the two had not heard the conversation.
"I would never have revealed it before the battle," Elenia said, her face twisted in regret. "I honestly thought you understood."
"It doesn't matter," Alidian said. Her voice sounded wooden, but she couldn't muster enough emotion to console her mother. Her future, her hope, had been destroyed in an instant. Her mother clearly wished she'd never spoken, but the words were out. She again reached out for Alidian, but Alidian shrugged away. "The battle is upon us," she said. "You should go,
Alidian."
"Go," Alidian said. "It's time." Alidian sped up, leaving her mother behind. At first, Elenia sought to keep up, but Alidian continued to accelerate, fleeing from the conversation and the tears it would bring. She sprinted past Jester and Red, and they called out for her. Alidian ignored them and cast a speed charm to accelerate even more. She did not look back or deviate, and the paladins surged to keep up. Regret and loss filled her until she tasted bile. Still she ran. She charged through the pass leading to Verisith and ascended into the valley. A 100-foot statue looked down upon her, a great boulder its footstool, keeping it free of the lake. She sprinted around the lake and aimed her path for the canyon and the waiting soldiers beyond.
"Alidian!"
Jester shouted, his voice distant as he tried to keep up. She sped into the canyon and turned the corner, the first wall coming into view. Spanning the canyon, the great wall contained a mighty portcullis. The steel barrier had turned fluid, and hundreds of steel needles extended, their movements resembling snakes. 200 Verinai battle mages stood on the wall, and someone shouted down to her. Yearning for the heat of battle, for the fire that would cleanse her mind of her burnt hope, she summoned flames in her palms. Her reckless charge drew cries of alarm from the Verinai, and they launched a barrage of enchanted missiles. Alidian shaped the flames into a wall that knocked them aside, and the ringing contact seeped into her heart like a death knell. The death of her life, her future, her love. All at once, her sorrow morphed to anger, and Whisper leapt with delight. But her anger was not the magic of rage, it was the fury of regret. Her mother was no longer an oracle, her sisters had betrayed her, and now her beloved was gone. She was alone, and the Verinai had caused it all. Whisper fought to breach her anger, but she hardly heard its voice. Her gaze fixed on the barrier ahead, she called on the earth and it surged upward, throwing her into a soaring leap. She flew 40 feet, and the Verinai shouted in dismay, their missiles knocked wide by her fire shield. Releasing a primal scream, she landed in the midst of the Verinai and brought her fists onto the battlements. Fire exploded outward, knocking Verinai into the canyon walls. They tumbled from the battlements and struck the canyon floor, their vaunted magic shattered and broken. But they were battle mages trained for combat, and they rallied against her. Spears streaked out of the canyon walls, forcing her to step off the battlements to escape the barrage. She cast a strength charm and landed behind the portcullis, where hundreds of entities waited. Bears and wolves, lions and reavers, they'd been waiting for the portcullis to open. Their flesh forged from every type of magic, they filled the canyon, the light from their bodies reflecting off the wall as far as she could see. Their lips curled back in snarls of fury and they pawed the earth. Any other time they would have inspired fear, but not today. The loss of love burned in her chest, and she poured the emotion into action, diving into the horde of entities in a reckless charge. Wolves of earth lunged for her throat and she burned them to dust. Bears of light reared to their hind legs and she yanked on the stone wall, crushing them into oblivion. A reaver of fire leapt over the rubble and she stepped under its body.
With her strength still active, she caught the beast and yanked it to the earth, onto a spike of stone. In her wake, Jester and Red reached the wall and caught the portcullis in their hands. Enchanted and empowered to stop any attack, the barrier fought the two paladins, the needles of steel plunging through the armor into the aquaflesh, but it could not harm Jester and Red, who were still back in Dawnskeep inside their requiems. They reared back in unison, ripping the portcullis from its moorings. The entire wall came down as the supports were broken and the battlements crumbled into the canyon, taking the mages with it. They screamed as they were buried, and the paladins leapt the rubble, diving into the horde of entities. Both drew the swords from their backs and carved their way through the magic creatures, sending shards of broken magic into the wall. Lost in the heat of battle, Alidian yielded to her instincts. Honed as a rune guard and further in her cell, she twisted and struck, conjuring a tornado of fire that churned through the ranks of creatures, sending them soaring. A wolf slipped through and lunged, catching Alidian's wrist. She flung the beast into Jester's sword where it was cloven in two. The sting of the injury did little to abate her fire, and she caught the next creature in a blast of light. The trio charged through the fray, the maelstrom of combat taking them down the canyon to the second barrier. The fortification had resembled a dragon curled around the portcullis, but now it uncoiled from its position to unleash a blast of dragon fire at Alidian. She summoned an earth shield, the ground rising to meet the blast of superheated flames. Fire coursed around her and heated the stone to yellow. Her feet sliding backward, she strained to hold the shield. Jester leapt to Red and she grasped his foot, launching the massive paladin over the flames in a soaring arc. Raising his sword as he fell, Jester landed on the dragon's head and drove his blade through the sentient's upper jaw. The dragon flailed to the side, its flames cutting off as the sword filled its maw. Smaller entities were crushed as it sought to dislodge Jester. Then Red leapt to the wall and kicked off, bringing her sword into the wing joint, driving it into the ground. Partially pinned, the beast trampled entities as it snapped at Red, but Jester muscled the head to the ground like a cattle herder dropping a steer. "My turn," Alidian said. She dropped the partially melted shield and advanced on the struggling dragon. Drawing on the tremendous heat in the canyon, she cast her own dragon's fire, sending a torrent of flames down the creature's mouth. Held open by Jester's sword, the beast was helpless to stop the current of fire. She poured an inferno into the dragon's maw, funneling every shred of heat into the great sentient. Red cracks appeared on its body, the cracks brightening by the second. A strangled roar escaped the beast as it swallowed enough heat to melt a legion of steel-clad soldiers. The cracks glowed bright and expanded across its body, threatening to explode. "Get behind me!" Alidian shouted. Jester and Red released their grips and leapt behind her. The dragon ripped free and tried to fly, rising several feet off the ground. Jester and Red scrambled behind Alidian, and she raised a wall of stone as the dragon detonated. Fire and shards of stone engulfed the canyon, shredding the remaining entities in the explosion. Jester shouted in triumph as the blast passed around them, cascading to either side of the earth shield. When it subsided, she lowered the steaming barrier to find the canyon shredded. Melting rock dripped down the walls, darkening as it cooled. Chunks of burning stone were all that remained of the mighty sentient. Red grinned at Jester. "You bring me to the best wars." "What will we do when it's over?" he lamented. "We promised," she said, shaking her head with a smile. "No talk of the future unless we survive." Alidian's heart darkened as she listened. The Verinai had anticipated Alidian and perhaps her friends. They had not prepared for two paladins, but the triumph tasted like ash and left her wanting more. It didn't matter if she won. She'd already lost. Chapter 42 Seeking the Rune Stone.
After separating from Alidian, Raiden took his journey south, circumnavigating the mountain ridge to where they'd escaped from Verisith. It had been a year and a half since he'd infiltrated the city under the guise of Runeguard. They'd sought proof of the Verinai's traitorous plans and been fortunate to escape with their lives. Devkin stepped out of the trees as they approached.
"They sealed the river's exit," Devkin said. "But I found the secret entrance. It's a mile east of here."
"Elfin should never have trusted Winter with its location," Marrow said with a smirk.
"She was a high-level master," Raiden said. "Of course Elsin trusted her."
"It will be guarded," Devkin said, taking the lead and making his way down the trail.
"I expect nothing less," Raiden said, drawing his sword.
They worked their way over the rocky trail, skirting the base of a mountain to an innocuous tree set against the cliff. The tree's roots had found purchase in the cracks of the stones, its canopy shading the trail. Devkin stepped to the tree and motioned Marrow to the trunk. "It only opens to very nigh."
"And neither of you possess magic," she said with a smile. "Don't worry, she'll open the door."
She stepped to the tree and placed a palm against the trunk, detonating the tree from the cliff. The sudden blast knocked Raiden from his feet. His vision swam and he coughed at the dust and smoke. He groaned and rose, stumbling to the gaping hole.
"You just had to show your magic," he growled.
"You said open the door," Marrow said, folding her arms.
"She did open the door," Devkin said, coughing through his smile.
Dust and smoke obscured the opening while the tree lay several feet away, its trunk burning and belching smoke. Cracks lined the cliff away from the opening, the magic meant to guard the barrier sparking where the curses had been severed. Through the haze, Raiden spotted a pair of mages just rising to their feet. Their eyes met, and the Verinai sought to summon their magic, but Devkin and Raiden darted in, their swords flashing.
"Let's go," Raiden said, "but watch for traps."
"Your face is bleeding," Marrow said, picking her way over the fallen guards.
He reached up and found a cut. It was not deep, but would likely leave a scar along his jawbone, adding to the litany of scars he'd gained from his time with Marrow.
Devkin shook his head as he tied a makeshift bandage around his shoulder.
"She causes more damage than the enemy," he muttered.
"When do I get a sword?" Marrow asked.
"No sharp weapons for you," Raiden said.
"How about a warhammer?" Marrow asked.
She conjured a ridiculously oversized hammer out of light and promptly dropped it on her foot. Hissing profanities, she hopped on the other foot.
"Let's just say no weapons," Devkin said, hiding a smile.
"Fine," she said petulantly, leaving the warhammer behind.
Raiden grinned and worked his way up the tunnel. He kept his attention on the walls, scanning for the marks that signaled a mage trap. Illuminated by light orbs bracketed into the ceiling, the tunnel rose in a gentle upward curve. They encountered two traps, and both were disarmed by Raiden's anti-magic sword. Marrow quickly grew bored and cast an entity of stone to play with. The gremlin spoke in dwarvish, and the two laughed and giggled. They approached a final bend, and a strong door came into view. There were no guards, but Raiden spotted a glow of light on the underside of the door. He slowed and signaled Marrow to silence, causing her to frown.
"I don't like being silent," she said tersely.
The light moved, indicating that its source had heard Marrow's comment. Cursing Marrow would only make her angry, so he looked to Devkin. They both drew their swords and stepped in front of Marrow. The door swung open, and a woman appeared. Dressed as a Verinai apprentice, she came to a halt when she spotted them. Her eyes widened in surprise, and then a smile of anticipation spread on her face.
"Elsin left an apprentice to guard an escape tunnel?" Devkin asked.
The woman's eyes lit up with excitement.
"I had little power in life, but Elsin gave me the choice to prove my worth."
She raised a hand, and her fingers turned to fire, the transformation spreading down her arm and into her torso. She smiled and released a breath,
sending sparks and light spilling onto the floor.
"Now I have so much power."
Raiden and Devkin exchanged a look and spoke in unison.
"Guardian."
The woman smiled.
"I never suspected I'd get to kill the vaunted soldier."
She pointed her hands at Raiden and he whipped his sword up, catching the blast of fire on the blade. Flames spilled to either side, and Devkin ducked underneath. Rolling to close the gap, he plunged his sword into her leg. Also imbued with anti-magic, the sword cut deep, sapping her power. The guardian growled and struck him, knocking him flying backwards. Raiden ducked his flying body and darted in, striking at her upraised hand. His sword passed through her wrist, and her hand darkened. She screamed and struck him as well. He tasted blood as he tumbled backward and landed close to Devkin. Marrow frowned.
"I don't like my friends being hurt."
The guardian limped forward and raised her good hand.
"Little girl, you know nothing of being hurt, but you soon will."
She pointed her finger at Marrow and sent a blast of fire strong enough to melt dwarven armor. Marrow screamed when she was engulfed in the inferno, and Raiden scrambled to his feet. Knowing it was futile, he leapt to the current of flames and caught them on his blade, the black material absorbing the magic. To his astonishment, Marrow stood unharmed. With wisps of fire sparking on her hair and clothing, she stood with an annoyed expression. Brushing the flames free like they were dry leaves, she shook herself, and the lingering sparks fell away. The guardian was so shocked, she cut off the fire to stare.
"What are you?" she asked.
"Marrow."
She said it like it was obvious. Then she looked to her gremlin still perched on her shoulder.
"Are you hungry, little one?"
Then her smile faded and her eyes flicked to the guardian.
"Because dinner is served."
The gremlin chirped and leapt over Raiden's shoulder. As it soared towards the guardian, it opened its jaws. Larger and larger they opened until they were big enough to consume the entire woman. Her eyes widened in surprise and she raised her hands, but the gremlin's mouth closed over her and swallowed her whole. The jaws closed against the floor, and the gremlin settled back onto its haunches. A muffled explosion came from the creature, and it burped, sending a burst of fire into the stone, charring the wall. Glowing cracks appeared on its small form before gradually fading. Then it padded back to Marrow and leapt to her shoulder, its tail coiling about her neck.
"Full?"
Marrow asked. The gremlin chirped in satisfaction. Raiden turned to Devkin, and the grizzled soldier grinned.
"I would not have thought of that."
"Ready?"
Marrow asked brightly, oblivious to the steaming and scorched walls.
"You have my gratitude," Raiden said. "But from this point forth, we need subterfuge, not sparks."
"I don't understand,"
Marrow said. The gremlin burped, sending a burst of fire into the ceiling and melting a portion of stone. Molten rock dripped between them, leaving a trail of steam from ceiling to floor. Raiden folded his arms.
"Oh,"
she said. Devkin grinned and slipped into the lead, withdrawing a map.
"Unless the Verinai have changed the tunnels beneath the city, we should be four levels below the farms. The surface is above that."
Raiden stepped through the door to find a small guardroom. The chairs and weapons on the wall suggested it was meant for four soldiers, but with the requirements of the war, the guild had left only a single lesser guardian. A set of stairs ascended out of sight.
"How close are we to the keep?" he asked.
Devkin consulted the map.
"Not too far." "Winter said the runestone is likely hidden in Elsin's office," Raiden said. "Even with fewer guards, we won't make it to her office."
Devkin stepped to the stairs and peered upward.
"How will we know when a Lydian strikes?"
"We'll know,"
Marrow said with a loud laugh. Raiden frowned and she lowered her tone to a whisper.
"Sorry."
"Let's get as close as we can," Raiden said. "When the guards leave their posts, we'll make our attempt."
Devkin nodded and fell into step behind Raiden. his map in hand. Marked with guard locations and directions, it showed the tunnels beneath the keep. In the lead, Raiden watched for threats while Devkin guided his path. The stark, empty tunnels contained numerous doors on either side. A glance through the bars revealed crates and barrels, reserves of food and water. He expected more guards, but there were none, their absence leaving the city disturbingly quiet. They crept their way through the abandoned underbelly of Verisith. After several minutes, they came to the garden level, so-called for its multitude of farms. The chambers on either side contained storm and sun charms, bathing the crops in water and light. But they showed the signs of neglect, the storms sputtering at the ceiling, the lights going dim, fruit and vegetables withered, their leaves turning black. "They've pulled their resources for the war," he said.
"But where are the guards?" Devkin murmured.
"You think they know Alidian is coming?" Raiden asked. A distant rumble sent a shudder through the stone. It could have been a landslide or thunder, but Raiden's eyes snapped east, where Alidian would be attacking the city. They all tensed and waited, and then another tremble shifted his boots. Marrow giggled.
"If they didn't fear her before, they certainly do now."
Raiden risked picking up the pace, but his caution was unnecessary. They ascended the stairs into an empty guard hall. Chairs lay scattered about, and food cooled on the plates. The door hung open, and he stepped to the opening, peering down the street. The guard tower was positioned adjacent to the keep, providing an excellent view of Verisith. The sun was just beginning to fall behind the mountain, its rays illuminating a vibrant city. But the streets were all but empty. Those still present rushed toward the main gates, and the sounds of boots echoed from all directions. Raiden spotted a knight prowling around a courtyard, its armor and skin vacillating between flesh and stone. Other guardians were equally as rattled, but their leashes kept them bound. Then Raiden looked beyond the city. A plunging gorge separated Verisith from the Canyon of Mages. Soldiers rushed up the stairs and sprinted through the enormous panthers. The cats prowled at the limits of their chains, agitated by something beyond. Light reflected on the canyon wall, bright and sharp. The sounds of battle rumbled like thunder, causing the guardians in the city to roar and shout. Raiden imagined the battle being waged and yearned to join, but they had their own assignment. He glanced to the sun to find it setting behind the mountains.
"Alidian's doing her part," he said, glancing at Devkin. "It's time we do ours."
Devkin nodded, his eyes on the sunset as well.
"Let's find ourselves a runestone."
Chapter 43 Titan Toron stepped into the Requiem and the branch lifted him into the sphere. The now familiar sensation of his consciousness linking to the paladin swelled over him, and he opened his eyes to find himself in the cavern, his head now 20 feet off the ground. He gave an experimental flex of his fingers, and then looked down on Galathon. The rock troll nodded in approval.
"It's as close as you'll get to being a rock troll."
At his side, Winter grinned.
"But it can't do magic."
"Perhaps," Toron said. "But it might be better."
"Let's get to the West Watch battlements," Winter said with a snort.
"Yes, General,"
Toron said, his voice distorted through the paladin. As Winter gathered the rest of their watch, the other paladins came alive, their eyes glowing as each soldier linked to a huge war machine. Toron felt a chill as the army came to life and advanced to the hole Alidian had created. Reaching to the rocks, Toron climbed to the surface. As he straightened to his full height, he marveled at how the once mighty fortress felt small. He strode to the swords leaning against the wall. All were 10 feet tall and built by the dwarves, each crafted for a specific paladin. Toron grasped the blade that bore the mark of fire and shadow. The flat steel blade was more a cudgel than a sword. Its edge was as dull as a hammer, the sheer weight of the weapon making it lethal. The dwarves had built the blade. He'd added the magic. He picked it up and fire arced along the blade, licking hungrily at the steel.
Let